Welcome to Drinking Bros, presented by GhostBed.com. Sit back, relax, and grab a fucking drink.
Yeah, welcome to Drinking Bros, kids. Let's get weird today. Okay, let's get weird today. Buckle up, kids. Going down the conspiracy rabbit hole today. D'Anthony, who do we got on the show today?
Don't ask me questions.
That's
a conspiracy in and of itself.
Yeah, is it? Or is he a conspiracy? Is your name real?
No, his name is Ian Crossland, and I think that's his real name.
Doesn't sound real.
Nobody really knows.
Doesn't sound real, Ian.
Sounds freakish.
It sure does. Yeah. Ian Crossland.
I used to think it meant that people crossed the land to get somewhere, and I was like, oh, no, that's where they used to crucify people, was in Crossland Hill. And like, I don't know if that's true or not, but that's what I think.
I think it sounds like a Klan member.
Like the Appian Way?
Yeah.
A lot of people got crucified there, like what, 5,000?
There's a
slaves, I think.
Really? There's there's this place in England called the Crossland Hills with one S.
Uh-huh.
I'm just guessing that that's where my ancestors are from. I don't know.
Is that what Appian Way means, by the way?
No, the Appian Way is a geographical location, but after the Second Slave Rebellion, Spartacus, you remember that name, right?
Uh-huh.
They crucified like somewhere between 3,000 and 5,000 people along the Appian Way to warn anybody coming into Rome that don't run away if you're a
this
slave.
This is my thing about the cross. People are like worshiping, all these Christians worshiping. It's a fucking murder. Can I swear on this show? It's a murder tool, man. It's like a gun. It's like worshiping a gun. I don't get it.
Well, you know, by the way, Leonardo DiCaprio's production company, Appian Way.
Okay. I mean, it's a pretty famous area in Italy. It's not like just about that. It just happens to have happened.
I'm hoping he maybe wanted to own slaves or something like that back in the past.
Well, he did in that one way around it.
Yeah, and Django he did.
Yeah.
God, I love that movie.
It's also, it was like a major highway in ancient Rome. Yeah. That's why so, they would put anybody people
that was
along.
Anybody that was coming into Rome had to come through that way for the most part, especially in mass. So any new slave that was coming from an outer territory in, they wanted to warn them.
And it was a dude named Appian that built it?
Dave Appian, yeah.
Dave Appian.
I have no idea about
he's cool. He's got a good band, too.
Yeah, very good.
Yeah, they're great.
They're playing at the Continental on Friday night.
That makes sense.
I'm kidding. They're not. Welcome to the show. Look, we were all on a huge panel over the weekends, and everybody was talking about the craziest shit possible here. We wanted to have you on the show because you're into conspiracies. Our audience loves conspiracies, so do I. I'll tell you where I used to live with all conspiracies. Okay, so when all this shit started, and I heard the first few, and there started docs started coming out. I didn't believe in any of it. I wouldn't watch it. I wouldn't listen to it. I couldn't. I was like, this is stupid. I can't get into it. As I've gotten older, I'm starting to believe in more and more conspiracies. So either I'm losing my mind or we're just being lied to so much on a daily basis by our media that I'm just starting to question everything, whether or not it's real or fake. And with the addition of AI, in the last, you know, year and a half here, that's gotten really good. I know it's been around before that, but now I'm starting to get really good. Now I'm questioning even more shit.
Dude, deep fakes. That's just going to change perception. And have you heard of these talking plasma? A lot of like aliens. People say these aliens are real. I don't think so. I think what it is like lightweight drones that they've been working on since they raided Tesla's lab in the early 1900s. They get like aluminum craft or like these metamaterials, aluminum glass. Then they probably have fusion packs on board and they just fly them around. Then you see the ones where the pilots are like, no craft could move like that. It went underwater, it went out in space. That's what they call, I think, talking plasma, where they focus lasers. They'll triangulate lasers into a point in the sky and it creates this ball of plasma. And then they move it around like a laser pointer and obviously, it's not a craft, but it looks like it on radar. And then they can teleport sound through the stuff. It's like Military Times. You can read about it.
Yeah, so to that point, this just happened maybe a week ago, Bob. If you can find it on Twitter, there was a Navy pilot's daughter who was on a commercial flight, and she got a clean shot of it on cell phone footage of this, what appears to be a saucer, flying right by the plane. She reported it to the FAA. She has cell phone footage of it that they slowed down and examined it. And it's almost identical to what you said. It was just moving so fast that nobody knew what it was.
Well,
and she was also concerned that nobody else had reported it.
Just to address the physics of this, there's something called parallaxis. Are you familiar with that?
I'm not.
So if I'm traveling, there's a couple of different ways to discuss this, but if I'm traveling, if you and I are traveling towards each other and I'm filming you, you appear to be going exponentially faster than what you really are, right? Because you're moving and I'm moving. Mm-hmm. So we measure velocity from a set point in space and then time. That's how velocity is measured. That, like, miles per hour, it's per unit of time, right? Mm-hmm. So if you're driving 100 miles per hour this way and I'm going 100 miles per hour this way, we're actually approaching each other at 1,000 miles per hour, right?
Right.
And then if you're moving at an angle to me, like if you're going this way, like you see in most of these videos, that means it looks 1,000 times faster than it really is. Not necessarily 1,000. The aircraft that's flying right here is probably traveling somewhere between 400 and 600 miles per hour. So it's that times whatever the fucking other thing is traveling, the drone or whatever it happens to be. So the speed thing can be a canard or a red herring to some degree.
Okay, so Bob, play this video one more time for the audience here, because they did slow this down, because in real time it was starting to move really fucking fast, and then it flew out of there. But go back to sort of the beginning where you can see it and just press pause, because this will go back to almost exactly what you said with the plasma thing. Like, all right, press pause right there. Perfect. That looks like what you just described, and it doesn't look solid all the way. It's hard to.
Well, if it's reflecting light, then it's probably solid. That's the problem. Plasma. I think those plasma beams would not reflect natural light like that.
As far as I know, they don't. They're just balls of plasma. Mm. They might even not show up to the naked eye. I don't know. But this, it could also be like an aluminum glass. It could be a metamaterial where you can kind of see through it. And they're working on this technology called supercavitation, where you'll take, like, I think lasers, and you focus them right in front of the craft, and it cavitates space so that it creates a vacuum, and then it sucks your jet, your plane forward. So it's like a super accelerant, and I think that's part of when they're working on warp drive.
Yeah,
it's a lot of it is they're cavitating space.
That's the only way we can think of in physics to go faster than light is to warp space time in front of the craft
and behind it. Yeah,
and behind it. Yeah.
I think they do warp bubbles around the craft. You just need a lot of power to produce a warp field. There's this other stuff called soliton projection, where it's kind of like ripples in a pond, but they're like static ripples, which can distort space time. But I don't know that I've never seen any evidence that any of that's being worked on.
As for these plasma fields, by the way, like, let's say there's two really practical applications. One is if you're trying to confuse enemy radar, you're firing focused beams into a small area and it creates a heat signature that's going to show up on a radar detector, right? So it looks like an aircraft. Remember that the F-18s and forward, the radar signature is about the size of a volleyball, and for an F-22 and Ford, it's about the size of a softball, right? It's really small in the air. Now, so if you're trying to confuse enemy radar, you only have to make a heat signature that big for them to think that it's jets. Now, if you can put 100 of those in the air, you can really confuse somebody and fly your own jet in under the auspices of it's a malfunction or whatever else. So that's why that tech exists.
Is the government currently working on something like this?
Yeah, they're always working on shit. Like, we still don't know everything about the Blackbird, the SR-22. We still don't know what the fuck went on with that. And that thing came out, what, in the 60s or some shit?
Mm-hmm.
And the new one, I think it's, Bob, you can look it up, but I think the Blackbird's grandson, if you want to call it that, is an SR-52 or something like that. And it's able to travel like 4,000 miles per hour.
Whoa.
Yeah.
This is, a lot of this comes from like Roswell, when they said, Bob Lazar was like, I saw all these crazy looking, I just think they're drones. I don't know. The metamaterial programs are modern science, I think 20-year. I don't know. I haven't really heard of metamaterials till. Nice dildo looking thing.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. Welcome. There's a bunch of dicks up here.
It's a really nice Rex. Angle.
Yeah. Yeah, well,
3D.
Beautiful thing.
3D. Yeah.
So who's to say? Couldn't with confidence say if the government is, but the government was working on the internet in the 50s with ARPA. Like, they'll probably tell you about it 30 or 40 years after they started working on it usually. Well, so now that talking plasma is public, I'm like, geez, how long have they been had this?
Yeah.
It looks like there's an SR-72 in the works. Possibly,
yeah, that's the one, 72.
Called Son of Blackbird.
Yeah.
And this is Lockheed Martin.
Yeah, and it's going to travel 4,000 miles per hour, which is a mile per second, basically. It's like a mile every 55 seconds.
Can they get it up into space?
The problem with that is temperature, right? And a lack of oxygen for combustion. But it would have to be traveling 25,000 miles per hour to escape Earth's orbit, I believe. And that's what rockets have to be traveling.
Like deep CERMAT. Those are metamaterials called CERMATs that are heat high temperature resistant.
Yeah, the temperature is solvable. I don't know if combustion is solvable. outside of the troposphere, you're going to have a really hard time because there's not a lot of oxygen. So you would have to have some kind of onboard fuel that doesn't interact, like liquid O2, which is what rockets use.
Oh, right? Okay.
So it'd be complicated, but yeah, it could be done, yeah. I mean, basically, you would take this thing and add boosters to it, and then they would jettison off once it reached orbit, near orbit.
And for me, like going back to the Roswell thing that you were talking about earlier, with Roswell, that crash that happened in 47 with the saucer and the thing, and I did an interview with the guy. He was super fucking old then at that point, but he was about to die, who had gone through the evening and talked about, you know, where they took it and all that other shit. And I didn't believe in any of that, by the way. I did after that, but then also looking at the shape of it, if you took this to, let's say, Area 51 or wherever you're examining this type of shit, it would take us years to probably figure out the technology. And I just think that it's taken all these years for us to figure out this type of technology and able to build it and then test it out and get it out into the world and actually use it. That's my personal feeling on it. So, like... whether aliens exist or not, I'm not sure.
Yeah, I don't see any evidence for it yet, but I would be surprised if they didn't. Yeah. Somewhere out there.
But why would it? Because John Brinkus was on the show, years ago talking about it, and he had a very good explanation. He used to produce all those UFO shows for History Channel and Sci-Fi and all that stuff. And he said, look, I definitely think there's ships, and I definitely think there's saucers and all that other stuff. He goes, well, why send people if you can just send ships? The way that we're essentially sending drones out to other countries. And why burn a body if you don't need to? Like, just, send it out. And if it crashes, it crashes. And
there's a problem. I said SR-22. It's SR-71. I don't know where I got 22 from. Anyways, the problem with interstellar travel is time, right?
Oh, like, and the people would die?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, you would have to have a civilization on board the aircraft that could survive for thousands of years.
Yeah.
Or maybe they figured out faster than light travel, but...
Yeah, warp field, warp drive, where you just bend space-time and you really travel faster than light.
Yeah. The only way someone could have gotten here by now is if their civilization was way older than ours, and I think they would have better technology than what we can conceive of right now.
I think, though, you're right, that they would either send probes or light, just measure us from a distance, so they don't actually have to... Like, we have radar and telegraphy, and we can, like, use a video camera to kind of be where the camera is, so we could... If we can measure it with a high-powered laser or something, maybe.
But it's still in the past, right? Because
technically, time. Yeah, unless you're going faster than light somehow.
Yeah.
We haven't figured that part out yet.
Uh-uh.
And but I do think it's a solvable problem. I don't buy that there's a galactic or a universal speed limit. That doesn't make any sense.
I heard that if light bends, that it travels faster than 300 million meters per second. But then someone was like, no, that's fake news.
No, it's not fake news. I mean, well, we don't know, to be honest, but something has to account for inflation. So the Big Bang happens. We don't know in what order this happened, but what we do know is the known universe, as it were, think of it as a balloon inflating with air, expanded like 30,000 times faster than it should have possibly been able to.
I have a model for that. I think what's happening, it's not just a Big Bang that expands forever. It's that we're in a torus, and what the reason why it looks like, what is it, the red shift? It looks like the wavelength is getting farther apart, is because the wavelength is actually, we're looking at a wavelength, the wavelength is turning. So it's turning, we're turning around, and so as we see the wave from a different angle, it changes color. It looks
you're
like
seeing the full arc of the turn is what you're saying, basically.
So you're watching reality bend back around towards a crunch. It's going to crunch through the center of this torus and then explode out into another bang out, and then we'll wrap around again. So it looks like it's getting further away as it's turning, as the light's turning. You see a different angle of the wave, and then it's just back around. And then where the inflation comes from, there's no closed systems. They'll tell you in science, we have closed systems, and you cannot get more energy out of the system than you put into it. But the reality, there are no closed systems. So as an energy expands faster, friction will cause it to heat up more, which will cause it to expand faster, which will create more friction, which will cause... And I think if you can calculate that, you'll be able to explain fusion and where that energy is coming from, which is outside of the system.
Maybe. And with this, Dan, the ship you brought, what would you call this, a plane?
It's a fighter jet, technically.
Okay, so with this fighter jet?
But it's going to be a stealth, like a hypersonic stealth bomber. That'll be what it's used for, not a fighter jet, excuse me.
Okay, so if I don't know you in real life and you bring this up, I don't know about this. Now, yes, there is a Wikipedia page that you brought up, but why is nobody else talking about this?
Well, I mean, because it's not real yet.
It's just like a mock?
Yeah,
you're
watching Back to the Future right now with hoverboards because it just doesn't exist yet. But
gotcha.
The theoretical tech for it exists, and they're going to spend a couple of billion dollars building this thing.
Okay.
When did they first announce this thing?
The first I heard about it was a couple of weeks ago, but I'm sure it's been, well, let's look it up. SR-72.
I'm all about these craft that can go underwater and out into space.
It was proposed privately in 2013, so it's over 10 years old now.
Wow. That's a long time.
98 feet. Well, that was just the spec, so who knows. They said, the Wikipedia entry says it'll be tested sometime next year and then in service by the 2030s at some point. We'll see.
Okay. Interesting. Now, again, you're huge into conspiracies here. What's your number one conspiracy?
Lucifer was the good guy. Okay. I think that whole Bible thing was a psyop. I think what happened was all these dudes are tripping. Michael, the archangels, all his friends, Lucifer's in there. They're all chilling. They're all taking psychedelics and hearing God. Or maybe they're smoking DMT. However they're getting their psychedelic, psychoactive experience, they're seeing God. And Michael's channeling God's words. And they're all sitting around like, yes, yes. And it's God. That's God. Is Michael's. And then Lucifer. But they have ancient technology. Atlantis. Atlantis is one of my favorite stories. 12,800 years ago, there was some global catastrophe which caused a megalithic global flood. Wiped out 75% of the megafauna in North America. All the glacial ice in North America melted. It's the end of the Missoula floods at the end of the Younger Dryas period. So
there are no trees older than that.
Except on the tippy tops of the Rockies, there's these ancient trees that didn't get hit by the flood, but everything else just got smeared. And then you look at the Western Sahara, you can see all the sand, the striations just pushed up onto the land. You see the Eye of the Sahara, which is probably, if you pull that up, the Eye of the Sahara, that looks like the capital of Atlantis. It's a ringed-looking city that was covered in mud. And so I think they had electricity. They have these Baghdad batteries. So later, Michael and the archangels still have the electricity. And Lucifer's like, we got to give this technology to the people. It is fucked up that we're keeping it from them. And they're like, no, it's too dangerous. You know what happened last time when the plebs got the electricity? We can't. And Lucifer's like, fuck you. And he goes out and he gives the electricity to all these people. And Michael's like, then it's war. And they go to war. And they torch it all. They incinerate the land. They call it hell. They demonize all the kings and dukes that had joined Lucifer. And they said, don't ever question it. And that's what I think happened.
And then you think they wrote a book about it?
Yeah.
Interesting. Have you heard this?
No.
I haven't either. Bob, what is this photo here? Is that what he was describing?
Eye of the Sahara, yeah.
This shit's wild. So you see the rings, and you can even look on like a Google satellite image and zoom in on this fucking thing. It is crazy. It matches.
So this still exists to this day?
Yeah, it's in northwest, in Mauritania, in Africa. I'm getting goosebumps. And you can see to the southwest, there's an opening. All that white stuff is salt.
Yeah.
It looks like they
dug
it open.
So it's definitely a riverbed at some point.
Yeah, or ocean. I mean, it's salt.
Well, an ocean bed.
Yeah, connected.
Me,
yeah. Or it was covered in ocean water, one of the two. But this was technically channeled out and connected to the ocean.
For that kind of salt to deposit, it had to be there for a while. But we're talking about hundreds of years of a flood, right? Like a real flood that happens globally every, 20,000 years or so. And not like the kind we're used to.
But how long would it last for?
I think it was like a week, 6 days. It was like 2-mile-high flooding. It lasted for up to 6 days, and I don't know all the specifics exactly. I mean, no one really knows what happened. But I think it was going on for about 6 days. And what happens is when all that ice in North America abruptly melted, when the comets hit or whatever caused it, like if there was a solar flare or a pole
asteroid
shift. Yeah, something melted everything. Not only did all that ice disappear, all the land jolted up because there was no longer the weight of the ice on top of it. Land elsewhere on Earth went sunk down because of the, when one area goes up.
Tidal friction.
Yeah.
So that's how tides work, right? The moon going around the Earth. It literally pulls water around it. If a large enough spatial object were to fly by us close enough, and what's the moon, 275,000 miles away, something like that? If a giant object, asteroid, were to fly between us and the moon, for example, it would cause floods all over the place.
I love this. This is freakishly. I mean,
on a smaller scale, I'll
you,
say
you
this.
Know what? You understand what I'm saying, right?
I do.
This is the moon. This is Earth. Something goes in between here. Instead of the moon pulling water a little bit this way, something like maybe even smaller but closer, because that's how gravity works, just yanks all the water up by the fucking root and just drags it across the continents, basically.
So in a smaller sense, this happened in Carolina Beach, where I got that house and all that stuff. They have to come out and dredge the land and add sand every 3 years because the tides go too high. Well, 3 years ago, 3.5 years ago, after they did it, it was a crazy one of those blood moons, or it happens once a year or whatever the fuck it is. But it happened at high tide. Yeah, it happened at high tide, and it ended up knocking out all the fucking brand new sand they put in and all the other shit. And then there was the erosion again. I mean, boom, and it was overnight.
Yeah.
When it did it, and I was like, man, if that happened on a global scale, I mean, you would obliterate everything.
I think the Grand Canyon was caused during that flood. Like, the whole thing was just ripped up. They're like, it happened over a million years, bro. Like, shit can just happen abruptly. It doesn't always, like, erosion can happen. You look at...
Yes, it can. And it can. I saw it happen one night, yeah. And I was just
well,
like,
well, the way that gone. They, the way that we calculated the time that took the Colorado River to carve the Grand Canyon is kind of sampling on the dependent variable, because you look at the sediment layers, right? Like, we know that the earth was rich with this particular mineral during this time. So this chunk, if you look at the, like, you look at the Painted Desert or something, you can see these patterns on it. That's what it is. It's different types of sediment and shit. But that would be the same if something got dragged through it immediately. That sediment built up over time doesn't necessarily tell you when the river cut into it. That's just when the sediment was laid there.
Right? Yeah. And after that, by the way, those huge shark teeth. I forget what they're called.
Megalodons?
Yes. Mm. Nick gave me one. Palmisano, mm-hmm. actually, when we finished range 15. A bunch of those started appearing at the south end towards the beach. And, like, people were scooping them up, obviously. But, like, the tide had just ripped everything up that was, you know, either under, above, or whatever. And it just kind of dispersed as it went further for a little bit. So, yeah, I can see what a tide can do overnight. Something like this is plausible. Is there a Google Earth image of this thing,
Bob? Yeah, find that, Bob. Especially, like...
So you're saying this still exists right now on Google Earth?
Yeah, you can see it.
Especially if it was... Let's say it was a massive object, but it was flat like a coin, right? Like a giant asteroid, but it was this shape. Mm-hmm. And it was going like this. Think about what precision hydraulic... saw or cutter can do, right? Like, you just focus water down to a little point, you can cut through steel relatively easily. Now imagine what you could do to rock if it were like that.
Check this out.
Crazy. Holy shit. So this is
to the southwest. You
this
see
this live right now?
Yeah. This is the satellite imagery. You can kind of slowly pull out. You see that the southwest is where Plato said Atlantis was, had an opening to the sea. All this sand covers ancient stuff. You can, if you go to, like, there's other maps where you can look at elevations, and you can see, like, in the deep elevations is where the sand is in there. That's a plateau where Atlantis, where the capital, I'm going to call it the capital, it's still, you know, up for debate, but this plateau here, this brown plateau, there's ancient riverways all over. If you zoom in and look around, there's what look like man-made dugout.
Yeah, like, zoom out just a little bit. Actually, zoom in and go up to that darker part around the northwest side. Like, those are tributaries basically coming out of that. What probably happened was a flood. Yeah. A flood happened. We would call those draws in geographical terms. But what probably happened is there was a flood, and a body of water rested there for some time, and then slowly dredged out over who knows how long, right?
Yeah, those were according to the Egyptians, when Plato got the story from the Egyptians, those were all like farms. All the area around on the plateau were farmland. Was the Atlantis kind of?
It makes sense. I mean, so the dirt. Being landlocked that like that, even if it was ocean water to begin with, the dirt, as you can see from the salt deposits, would filter out the salt, so it would become fresh water over time. So it would be usable for farming and things like that. I mean, that's kind of how all water became, got onto the continents in the first place. It's all the same way. Glaciers melting or whatever, but it's still salt water that became fresh water because of the filtration process.
Yeah, so let me ask you this. Do people make pilgrimages there and all that stuff? We should go and see this.
It'd be a lot cooler than going to fucking Mecca, wouldn't it?
Yeah, there's a guy that went
or
there.
Or Graceland. I don't know. Graceland might
Graceland's
be better.
Dope. Graceland I'm a big fan sweet. Of Graceland. Yeah, Graceland. They won't let you up to the toilet, though, where he died. I tried to get up there.
That's why I couldn't work at Area 51. I would want to dump out and all the alien turlets.
Yep.
And the reason is because Demolition Man.
Yeah.
I never figured out what the three seashells did.
I didn't see.
And now, well, you should watch it.
Well, you should watch it, dude. And then you'll want to dump out there. So
yeah. I like the sound of that. Yeah. This place in Mauritania is highly guarded by the Mauritanian government. And I think there's a guy, goddamn, I wish I could remember his name. He went there. It's just desert. But we need to excavate this.
We excavated this, that would give us the answers?
I think we'd find all
we
sorts
We would find
of stuff.
Some stuff for sure, because there was very clearly a civilization there at some point. Like, that's not a natural relief.
Yeah, they do right? believe... How this was formed was maybe an underground volcano that didn't erupt. It popped the surface and caused a ripple millions of years ago, and then humans found it and settled on top of it, potentially.
Possible. I mean, that would explain the divot in the earth, but it still was clearly filled by water. You can tell by the draws going out.
And to the southwest, it looks very clearly cut, like they dug out a channel to the ocean in the southwest, right there in the bottom, right there. It looks like that was dug open in the bottom left in the corner.
And all that, and it could have been to expedite the filtration process, to be honest, right? Because all of that is the salt deposit. All that yellow shit you see right there is the salt.
So why haven't we sent any you know, Explorers or, you know, National Geographic or the History Channel or something like that to do anything about this? And why is it being protected?
I don't.
If it's not real, you know what I'm saying?
The Mauritania, that's a good question for the government of Mauritania. They're just maybe on guard against it. Sometimes, interestingly, with Egypt, like Graham Hancock does a lot of research into ancient Egypt, and he questions the narrative, and the Egyptians are like, no, go away, because they have a narrative. And if you disrupt their narrative, they might lose money. Mm. They might lose their tourism. So maybe they're
because it would be relatively easy to take GPR, like ground penetrating radar, and go in there, and you wouldn't even have to excavate it necessarily to know if there's shit down there, right?
Especially now with drones and what you're able to do.
They have drone-based ones too, but they're land-based ground-penetrating radars. It'll show you a pretty fucking clear image of what's going on up to like 200 feet below the surface, I think.
Okay. Because that would be unbelievably fascinating. If they did excavate it, what do you think they would find?
Probably like remnants of, I would imagine, if it got hit by a huge mud flood, water, mud, and sunk, would there be like boat? Would the wood still be petrified and preserved deep under the sand? I don't know.
Or were they using wood? I mean, the stories from Atlantis are that they were a more advanced technological civilization, right? And the timing would work out somewhere close to the pyramids and things like that, because they're what, about 6,000 years old, we think?
Maybe, those about maybe six, eight, and Atlantis eight. Is 12,800, yeah. So more around the Sphinx, that era.
The Sphinx, I mean, yeah. So, like, because the pyramids, we can kind of figure it out physics-wise. The Sphinx, with the how rounded it is at the top, is, I think, impossible.
It's possible that these guys were working with what's called, Randall Carlson referred to as implosion technology. Like, we use explosion, mm-hmm. we use propulsion, combustion to push, but you can also, like, Tesla is working on vibrating systems to make them move or to make them change, like resonating mm-hmm. frequencies. If they were resonating the Earth, and they caused the Earth's magnetic field to drop, and that's why the comets just peppered North America and Asia, and they fucking annihilated the planet. Like, it's like the inverse of a nuclear catastrophe. Mm. That might have happened. Like, I wonder how advanced these guys
are. I mean, that's an interesting idea. So the way that the Earth's magnetic field works is there's nickel, molten nickel at the center of the Earth, allegedly. Right?
Yeah.
I don't know if we know that.
I haven't been down there in a while.
But plasma, too.
Or ever.
Yeah, it's been a while. I mean, there's liquid rock, too. There's plasma down there. So it's spinning at such a rate that it's creating, not static electricity, but similar, right? So there are these, it looks kind of like a Mobius strip without the cross in it of magnetic fields coming off of the poles of the Earth, and blocks out UV, it blocks out solar storms, things like that. But it also will push smaller celestial objects out of the way when they're coming towards us. That's why we don't get hit by comets all the time. And that's why when we do get hit by big asteroids, they're fucking big, right? We don't get hit. We don't get hit by the, I don't know, by the kind that are the size of this lot right here. We get hit by the kind that are the size of Manhattan. That's the one in Mexico 63 million years ago.
Or the Yucatan that wiped out the dinosaurs purportedly.
It's about the size of Manhattan. Right?
Yeah, they'll normally get either pushed away or burned up in that field. That magnetic,
so you got to
like
be kind of
toroid.
You got to be kind of in the Goldilocks zone, right? To actually get through the atmosphere and make impact with the Earth. So there's probably something to that if they were fucking around with resonance
and trying to send long distance electricity by resonating the Earth using these telluric currents and stuff, which are these like underground channels. I think they're under the pyramids. There's a telluric current. Telluric currents are interesting philosophy.
This is the problem with this stuff. There's like a lot of pretty basic physics that back up some of these theories. And maybe they started with the physics and made the theory up after that. Who knows, right? But it's still very compelling.
Well, and then I think the biggest reason why is, and again, I'll go back to today's current society of believing in conspiracies and all this other shit. If you actually knew the answers to a lot of this, there is a lot of people out there who would lose a lot of money for the things that they're selling in businesses and all that other shit today, religions and all of it.
They lose a lot of power too. It isn't just the money. Like if all of a sudden we realize that the angels and demons we know of were people on Earth and they were deified in mythology later on, then I think the concern from them would be like, well, we won't have any power anymore. I don't think that's true. I think people would still be Catholic. But it's culturally rooted now. I don't think it's a problem anymore.
Like, a lot of the messages in the Bible are solid, but like the whole like angels flying with wings and believe us, it's like if you can get someone to believe something ridiculous, you've got them in your cult. Then they'll do anything for you. And like those dudes had hang gliders. They were just fucking flying around. That's what they were dropping boiling oil on people, and that's
You're saying that the demons were Hamas?
every day, dude. That's all I talk about. And like, I see what you're saying. God created the earth. Well, what if that isn't the case? What if Adam and Eve weren't like the beginning? I can see how that would upend a lot of the power structures of religion.
They think that. And maybe it would to some degree. People wouldn't put so much emphasis in what the man representative of the faith is. Probably that's true, but I don't think people would abandon their faith because of that, frankly. I don't believe that.
In fact, I think God is real, and I think science is helping us perceive it. Like, if you see the cosmic microwave background radiation with a radio, they figured out what they use, point radio telescopes out into the universe. They see like a web of radiation left over after this recent Big Bang.
Pull that up, Bob. Pull up the CMB, the cosmic microwave background, and then pull up an image of neural channels in a brain.
Yeah, exactly.
Side by side.
This is the fractal nature of reality, where you see like atoms kind of look like solar systems, kind of look like a neural net in your brain, kind of looks like the cosmic microwave background radiation.
So if you believe in God, then what is it?
That's what I'm trying to figure out. So like I thought that it.
Well, I mean, so deists, the founders of this country, deists, they believed in God, but they didn't necessarily subscribe to any organized religion. They believed in something called a prime mover, right? Like a creator, but not somebody who takes personal interest in the day-to-day goings-on.
Is it a man, woman?
Why would it be either of those things, though, right?
Right, and that's what I get to. It's like
it would probably be a man. Let's be real.
Yeah.
Because it's all fucked up and destructive. A woman probably would have made it nurturing. Men made it tough.
Blonde hair, blue eyes. Just like eyes. Jesus, dude.
Yeah. I was in a trip. I was communicating with the entities, you know, the DMT entities, and I was like, "Are you God?" And they laughed, and they're like, "No, no, no." I was like, "What is God?" And they told me it was a torus. It was a vortex. That was all they could tell, and I could tell they didn't really know, but they thought it was like the center of the universe. It's just the center.
But that's kind of the beauty of all of this, and every religion that's out there, or every belief system, is that we don't know.
Bob, look up.
And that's what makes all of this still go on a daily basis across
the world. Look up the cosmic web of galaxies. It's better than the CMB to demonstrate the point I'm trying to make. The cosmic web of galaxies is another shot taken, like what he's talking about with radio telescopes, but it shows the negative space around galaxies and superclusters and superclusters. This is what all the empty space, by the way, is what we perceive to be dark matter. It's gravitationally affecting visible matter. It makes up 96% of all the matter in the universe. We have no idea what it is or how it works or any of this stuff.
And that's it right there?
This is what the universe looks like. All those.
Zoom in on it?
There's no point in zooming in. Every little.
Just for me personally.
Every pinpoint on that, every little fucking microscopic pinpoint on that is an entire galaxy, right?
And who took this photo?
Your mom.
I know she did.
No,
but
it was,
she never gave it to me.
This was, I think, that radio telescope array that's in all over the Western Hemisphere. I think there's one in San Diego, one in Hawaii, one in Chile, a bunch all over.
And how far away from Earth is this?
Billions of miles, or billions of years, rather. We measure in time.
How do we get this photo, then?
What do you mean? It's a radio telescope photo. It's actually, I think, something like 250,000 separate photos, all put together.
Okay.
Basically. And then Bob, pull up a picture of neural channels in a brain. Not the one that you were looking at. There's better pictures than this. You'll see the picture I'm talking about now that you've seen that.
And you're comparing the two, right? That there. This is what our actual brain.
Well, yes. this is what the inside of your brain looks like from a what are you doing?
Now
go back to the one you were on.
Yeah, the one you were on. That's the photo I've seen. Okay, so I have seen this. Wild.
And this is what the neural channels in your brain look like.
They're so similar.
So aside from all the fat that's in there, this is what the actual conductive electricity looks like.
And so maybe these solar systems and star systems are like neurons of God.
Maybe our universe is a fucking brain of some much larger creature, right? We wouldn't know. How would we know the difference?
We wouldn't. So where do you think we go when we die then?
I think we become high frequency and we're still ever present, but just in a high frequency form. That's why I think they say people, when they smoke DMT or vape DMT, they say they see the purple lady. Mm. And I realized yesterday, I was thinking about it, that I think it's ultraviolet. They're seeing high frequency.
Probably, yeah. I think that's probably true. Ultraviolet. I don't know about I think that the Awaya or the soul or whatever the fuck you want to call it, depending on where you come from in the world. I think Awaya is Sanskrit or some shit, but it means essence, I think, the literal translation. But it's you, the self, whatever that is, however you define it. I think there's a good chance that that is a physical object of some sort in the fourth spatial dimension, right? And that we're a host for that. This body's just a fucking meat sack that's a host for that thing. And it probably just returns when it's finished with the body.
I think that's why the heart's beating. It's like, where's that energy coming? What's that pulsing energy?
I mean, we're electric. Yeah, like, there's electricity flowing through our body.
Have you looked into like the Thunderbolts project and the electric universe theory? Mm-hmm. The whole like the moon is magnetic. It's held in position perfectly between the Earth and the Sun. The way that I think that the moon was formed was another planet called Theia. Theoretically, mm-hmm. 4 billion years ago,
it slammed into the side of Earth. It was about the size of Mars, and it slammed into the side of Earth. Right, increased Earth's mass by about a third, and then blew off the crust of the Earth and created an accretion disk. Right, think of Saturn's rings mm-hmm. or any of the other gas giant rings. But over millions of years, I think 400 million years, they think, all the big parts slam into each other, gravity takes effect, and they all slam into each other. And that's what the moon is. That's why we find similar material on the moon and the Earth. Otherwise, it wouldn't make any sense, right?
And the iron is super magnetic.
Yeah. Yep.
The thing about gravity, I think it's also is like it's a resonating frequency of magnetism. I kind of think there is like a unifying force of I don't know if it's magnetism. It's probably a lot of different ways to look at what's causing magnetism, but like gravity is kind of like the Casimir effect. Mm. Like the closer two things get, they get so close that they push all the matter out from between them and they create a vacuum and then they suck together. And that's kind of what happens with gravity. You get so close and then you snap to it. And it's same with magnets. They get so close and then they snap. It's just so similar.
Yeah. And they actually, the other interesting part about that is they never actually make physical contact, right? Like my two fingers right now are not actually touching each other. That's electromagnetism in practice. So what effect that has on gravitation? Electromagnetism is way stronger than gravity. We know that because I can defeat gravity right now just by lifting my hands over my head, right? Like, or jumping off the ground. Gravity is the most easily defeatable of all the four forces. Strong, weak nuclear force, electromagnetism, and gravity.
Yeah, which that's why, maybe why I think of it as a resonating frequency of a resonating magnetism as opposed to an actual, it's not actually magnetic.
Yeah.
So if you're...
I mean, that's string theory to some degree, right? I think there's a lot of assumptions made because it's untestable, so how do you figure it out? But vibrations of strings, that's what string theory is. It's like, think of all subatomic particles, there's a membrane and there's little strings attached to it. They're all looped strings except for gravity, which is a string that's hanging off at the end. So that's why a lot of physicists think if we run into another, if we're an M-theory universe or soap bubble universe, the way we would communicate with another universe would be through gravity, just like resonating frequencies like that, right? Like you would pick up a phone call and you would say into it whatever you said, but it translates it into vibrations. Essentially, yeah. Which is basically what your fucking ear does anyways, right?
Yeah.
So we're not too far off. I mean, that's what that's what these things do.
And everybody who's gone to space, you know, like a lot of people have said that they've heard these vibrations, they've heard these, you know, magnetic waves, and they're like, oh, I don't know what that is. And then they're studying it, and there's people up there now.
Have you done sensory deprivation? You ever get in those deprivation tanks and just...
Okay. Oh, so there was one in Wilmington, North Carolina, and I would go in those fucking pods, and you're in floating water, it's all salt, and you just check the fuck out, and like, it depends on who you are as a person, so I used to go a lot, and just because it was one place that you can't have a phone, you can't have anything, and you're just gone for an hour, right? And I really, really enjoyed it. However, there was a couple times I went where nothing happened, and I couldn't quiet my brain or whatever it was, and I knew I was in a fucking pod and that was it. So I kind of stopped going because the last two times in a row I couldn't calm my brain down.
I've heard deep vibration in those low sound environments when there's like no sound, you hear like there's still a sound.
It sounds like a didgeridoo kind of. Yeah.
And they make you put these things in your ear, and I guess it's for water too, for the water not to get in or whatever. But the other part of this is,
well, you can hear electricity too, right? Like if you walk by power lines that are unshielded, you can hear the hum.
Yes.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
That's what that is.
Use that Rife machine. I got a Rife machine. Yeah. Ooh, that's intense.
But when I went home that night, well, and another reason why I enjoyed it was I would always set it as a late session. I would fucking I never sleep at all. I'm lucky to get 4 or 5 hours a night. I would have like these crazy intense deep sleeps for like 10 hours, and I think it was because the vibration or whatever's going on in your head was finally quiet for a full hour, and then it would allow me to sleep for a long period of time. So I used to go a lot. Dude. And it was because it was across the street from my house, and I liked it.
I was told by my buddy Corin Nemec, who's phenomenal. You guys would he'd be a great guest on here. He's like a Freemason. Parker Lewis
Parker
can't
Lewis,
lose. Parker
dude,
Lewis,
yeah,
dude. Corin,
the TV show.
He was telling me that the pyramids were sensory deprivation chambers. The sarcophagi were deprivation tanks. They'd go in, they'd put salt water in there, they'd land, they'd cover it up, and then they would hum. They would do different frequencies, and people would get act. Their DNA gets activated in these things, and then they come out and they're like, "I'm ready."
So I mean, the you have an option of music in there while you're in these things. So you can either go in quiet, or they'll play music while you're in the deprivation chambers. I chose the music just because the silence was
deafening.
Too much? Yes. I mean, for real, where it was, it creeped me out. I don't like that intense silence for an hour. I mean, of not hearing anything. Like,
it's, you have to apply the same rules to that you apply to doing hallucinogens. And there's two rules. This isn't real. This won't last forever.
I agree.
That's the only way you can really not even survive it, because that's not a thing, but like it, like benefit from it, I think.
It was too intense for me. And you nailed it. I mean, you hit it right on the head. Like, I felt like it was a bad trip that I wanted to end. And I was waiting for the hour to be up. Sometimes you'd slip into a sleep or whatever, and then the other times not. So next time I was in there, I was asking for
you probably and shit like that. You probably weren't sleeping, by the way.
No,
it's probably that your sensory tools. I don't know what the right way to put this is. Shorted out, and they just stopped. Where, like, you know, if you're running, I don't know if this ever happened. You playing football or anything, but if you're running, you get hit unawares and your body tilts at a certain angle too abruptly, your brain just shuts off for a second, right? Yeah. Like you lose vision for a split second. It's not long enough, but you notice, like, I've had it happen before. I'm running the bases in baseball. Mm-hmm. My feet slipped out from under me and all of a sudden I'm falling backwards, but I can't see shit. Like I just black out for half a second and then I wake up on the ground. Wake up's not the right word though, right? Because you didn't actually
fall asleep. Sleeping. Yeah.
Your sensory mechanisms were just like, nope, this doesn't make sense. Let's reboot and see what's going on later.
Is that to like conserve energy to protect your body? It goes to like pushes it to different areas. Not that you would
to some degree. That is true. Yeah, it's the same thing that causes chronic traumatic encephalopathy, right? CTE. Your brain is hardwired to optimize for efficiency. So when it sends signals to different parts of your brain, if it's not getting the appropriate or quick enough response from that part of the brain, then it stops sending information there. And CTE is where that part of the brain just dies. But you can bring it back, right? With psilocybin, ibogaine, DMT, all sorts of stuff.
Yeah, neurogenesis.
Yep.
And I think that's why people do it. Because that's they want the to experience to it, yeah, they want to experience that 1 second, that one thing they've had in their life.
But yeah, that's essentially what's happening is your brain, your computer is saying that process is not working. I'm going to control alt delete it right quick.
Oh yeah,
that's
computers will freeze when they're overloaded with activity.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, your brain is so different. And it does it to protect you, by the way. Otherwise you're going to go into shock and you don't want that.
Like your computer will literally overheat and shut down and destroy itself if it doesn't.
And I think everybody remembers the first time that it happened to them too. Probably, that's how powerful it is. Like mine was a hit in football. It was a wide receiver, older kid who was on varsity. I was coming up and they were like, fuck this cocky kid. Mm. And went over the middle, got drilled. That was the first time that I experienced it. It wasn't a concussion. I was a violent hit and I hit the ground, but it was a clean, legal hit in the body that's just snapped me into this 1-2 second tops experience. That I was like, oh fuck.
Yeah, your body is good at doing that sort of stuff. That's why we still exist.
Very reminiscent of the Marvin Harrison hit.
No, because that was an illegal hit to the head. So with me,
he probably got concussed on that one.
Yeah,
clean and legal.
He was knocked the fuck out. Otherwise, he would have came back in.
Well, maybe though. That's not entirely true. So we don't pay enough attention to the natural processes of our body. We think we're fucking so smart. Like we're gonna trick nature. We're gonna trick 4.5 billion years of the Earth existing. When your body goes into shock, we have this tendency, especially in combat medicine, to try to pull the person out of shock. But that isn't necessarily the right move, right? Like the body is stabilizing itself for a reason. When you break something and it swells up, why would your body do that naturally? What would be the purpose of that? Think about it. It's to destabilize the area, right? Mm-hmm. So it doesn't bend and fuck it up worse. Stop putting ice on it, asshole. Like that's not what you're supposed to do. I understand if you're a professional athlete and you have to fix your fucking sprained ankle so you can go play basketball or whatever the fuck, you got to do what you got to do. But if you're at home and you roll your ankle and it starts to swell up, let it be swollen. Put some ace bandage around it to keep it compressed in the same spot to help what it's already trying to do. But don't try to unswell your joints. That doesn't make sense. It's doing it for a fucking reason, right? And yeah. If you're doing combat trauma and somebody goes into shock, we try to prevent people from going into shock sometimes. Maybe your body is so traumatized that it needs to go into shock and shut down temporarily until you can get to a higher level of care. Maybe that's the case. Maybe your body knows a little bit more about being a body than you fucking do.
Kids, we got some sponsors to put this shit wagon on the air. First and foremost, ghostbed.com/drinkingbros. 50% off. Everything in the entire store, that's pillows, sheets, mattresses, adjustable bases, you name it, they got it. They got the weighted blankets now, too. Mattresses for RVs. Shit. Even Venus Williams has her own line of mattresses over there. Huge fan of their products, all made in the U.S. of A. And the patents they have on these things are incredible. They got the cooling technology. The massager just showed up at my door. The massaging topper just showed up at my door. I'm going to give it a go over the weekend. Big fan. You can either put it down on the bed, or you can put it on the floor, you can put it whatever you need to. And it comes with a remote control that's available for pre-order right now. The beauty of GhostBed is it doesn't matter how many items you put in the cart. You're getting all of them 50% off with the promo code DRINKINGBROS at checkout. Plus, when you check out, you're going to see a 3-year pay-as-you-go program. No interest, as long as you have decent credit over there. And guess what? You can stretch out those payments for 3 years. Stretch them out. Doesn't matter how many items you put in the cart. Stretch it out over 3 years. Get yourself a brand new bedroom set at ghostbed.com/drinkingbros today. Next up, we got firstform.com/drinkingbros. Talking about those microfactors, dog. Gotta get those vitamins in you. All of us out there, including myself, even today, dude, I'm a piece of shit today. I didn't work out. I didn't eat the way I wanted to today. At least when I take my vitamins, I feel better about myself because those are important. Yeah, maybe I can make up that workout tomorrow. Who knows? But we got to get the vitamins in us. We got to get the essentials in us every single day. What's in them? Well, you got the antioxidants, the CoQ10s, the multivitamins, the fruits and veggies, the EFAs, and the probiotics. Comes in an easy, convenient plastic pouch in a little cardboard box. Just pops right out. Pop in your gullet and you're good to go. But 40 minutes later, your pee is going to be bright yellow. So you know that it's working. While you're over there, check out their liver detox as well. Man, that's good. It's especially good on a Monday. If you've been going hard on a weekend, get that liver detox. All their supplements are great over there. Head on over to firstform.com/drinkingbros right now, and you're going to get free shipping on orders over $75. Next up, we got the Perfect Gene. Perfect Gene is fucking bomb, dude. We've been wearing the shit out of these lately. Dan's been showing them off even. Even Dan's wearing jeans now. Big fan of these, all right? The Perfect Gene fits exactly like it sounds. It is perfect. When you get these things, they come in a little bag. They're airtight, and then you pop them open, and you're good, dude. Whether you're a thick daddy or a short king or anything in between, the Perfect Gene has you covered with 6 fits from skinny to thick, thick. And when I say thick, thick, I'm talking triple C on that. Waist sizes from 26 all the way up to 50. Lengths from 26 to 38. They've got the perfect size for you. Who says size doesn't matter? Trust us when we say these are truly fucking perfect jeans. Once you try them on, you'll never go back. For a limited time, our listeners get 15% off their first order plus free shipping at theperfectgene.nyc. Or Google the Perfect Gene and use the code DRINKINGBROS15 for 15% off. Again, I'm a huge fan of these. They sent them into the show. I'm wearing the shit out of them all the time. Even D'Anthony's wearing them around. They're comfortable. They're stretchy. They're great. You can move easy in these things. Go side to side in the old Perfect Gene. Last but not least today, we got BubsNaturals.com. Promo code DRINKINGBROS gets you 20% off over there. Collagen protein is what we're talking about. Pop it in your coffee. when you get up in the morning. The MCT oil powder over there will be your new favorite functional coffee creamer as well, dude. Just pop a couple scoops in the morning, you're good to go. Collagen protein, great for your skin. It's got 20 grams of protein, 7 essential amino acids in it, 1 single ingredient. This is essential for joint health, muscle recovery, and gut health. MCT oil powder is vegan and keto friendly. It's great for mental focus and energy. Also love their apple vinegar gummies over there. Pop 2 of those in my mouth to get the day started at bubsnaturals.com. Now, Bubs Naturals was named after, it was a tribute to Navy SEAL Glenn Bub Doherty, a national hero who laid down his life saving Americans in Benghazi. His call sign in the Navy was Bub, and Glenn Bub Doherty stood for self-improvement and was always helping others. That DNA is woven into the Bubs brand. Bubs donates 10% of all profits to charity in Glenn's honor, starting with the Glenn Doherty Memorial Foundation, and on Veterans Day, 100% of the proceeds go to the Glenn Doherty Foundation. You're already taking collagen protein. You're already taking MCT oil. You might as well take it from a company that supports veterans. Go to bubsnaturals.com. Use the promo code Drinking Bros for 20% off.
Yeah. Oh,
yeah. And to that point, because we were talking about DMT before you came on the show, that one hit created fear. And that's kind of, you know, it happens in every single day of someone's life, right? A car accident, or you know, something bad happening to your family members or whatever. But whatever fear that creates in that moment is the reason why I'm afraid of doing DMT, in case, because I don't know what it would do to me. I used to say back in the day that I wanted to do it, and ayahuasca and all that other shit. Now I'm afraid of whatever could trigger that one second that it would fuck up my brain forever and I wouldn't be the same person.
That's not how it works, though.
Well, it depends on who it is. No, so I listened to Neil Brennan on Rogan the other day.
Neil Brennan's a pussy, by the way.
I know his brother really well. Well, not
you
really
do?
Well. Yeah, I used to do play with
so
him.
So he's been on this crusade about DMT, doing DMT forever, right? And then sits down on Rogan. You know, that show's fucking 4 hours long, so you're going to get into everything. And he admitted that the first 18 months after he did it was horrific. And he was questioning everything. He thought, you know, he was one of God's thoughts. I think that was his exact phrase that he was using. And he goes, it did change my life for the better in the end. But for 18 months, I was walking around in this fucking haze that nothing is real. I shouldn't be here and all that other shit.
That is an extremely fringe case, honestly, a very fringe case. What DMT does is forces you to ask and answer questions that you're refusing to ask and answer in your life, right? So yeah, there's going to be fear. There should be, because that's what anxiety is. Anxiety is fear of being unprepared or not having dealt with something. I'm anxious about the exam that I have to take because I don't feel like I'm prepared for it. That's what anxiety is. It's a good thing. It's supposed to be like, all right, I need to go work harder or whatever the fuck. Just like thirst is telling you to drink some fucking water, right? That's all it is. When you smoke DMT, like after you do it a bunch of times, it becomes different. But when you're in the first stages of dealing with this stuff, that's what you're going to do. And it may take 2 or 3 or 4 times of doing it before you actually get there. Because most of the people I know that do it the first time, it's like riding a roller coaster for the first time. It's like, oh shit, I don't even know what just happened.
Yeah. Right?
The second time they do it, most people that are fucking not retards will come in intentionally.
But like, I might be the retard you're talking about. And that's what I'm afraid of.
Have you ever done a gut cleanse, an intestinal cleanse?
Yeah.
We've got this Zen cleanse to do. Yeah. Oh, have you? You may know it's a 7-day intensive cleanse, warm water. You take the vegetable resins and then you shit out this mucoid plaque that lines your inner intestine. Oh, yeah, my God. Yeah. That's awesome.
Black.
And that shit will mind control
it's not
you.
Awesome.
That's got to be like
96% of the serotonin.
I did not enjoy it whatsoever, dude. And by the way, that shit it looks like charcoal black. It's disgusting.
Wow.
You can't believe that it came out of your body.
It looks like venom.
Yeah, and
like the alien from Spider-Man.
Correct.
That's what it looks like
and
to
the
me,
smell
yeah.
that's in it is like shit that's been inside of you, literal shit that's been inside of you for like years,
and
you feel like.
Yeah, rubber and plastic.
It was disgusting.
If Elvis had done this, he'd probably still be alive.
Probably.
They say to do it before the ayahuasca so you don't have this horrific purge because you've already kind of got the nastiest stuff out of you.
I was just doing it because at the time, I was in my 20s, and I thought I was going too hard, like partying-wise and shit like that. And I was just like, all right, I got to get all this shit in my body and kind of focus. I was about to do this film, and I was like, I got to do this. And that was recommended. I didn't enjoy the drinking of the shit and everything that came along with it. I enjoyed what came out of me at the end of it, but it's one of those things where I'd say it's probably helpful maybe every 5 years or something like that.
Yes, some people swear by it. I've had it for 5 months and I'm like, oh God, when am I going to do this? I need a week. I need to take a
week
off.
But I wasn't
off.
Doing it for ayahuasca or any of that. I mean, I was just simply doing it to get healthy for life.
Did you notice a mind changing your mind and your thoughts after the cleanse?
Well, that's the weird part about this is I think the change in my mind and my thoughts was simply because I wasn't eating. And so you start thinking about shit that you shouldn't be thinking about because typically you're eating every day and filling your body up with energy and nutrients like Dan always talks about on this show. And I didn't know if it was that or other shit that I was thinking about. So it's a tough one for me. And I think everybody's experience will be different. Yeah. I felt healthier inside.
Well, 96% of the serotonin your body makes is made in your gut.
Okay.
There's so many neurons in the gut. Like, it's a brain and your heart and your brain. Obviously, the three of those things work together in synergy. They're supposed to be working together in, like, true synergy. And I feel like the chemicals on your food have intention. Like, the bacteria that lives on sugar, candida, or, like, the putrescine and cadaverine that live on, like, animal products that cause putrefaction. They go into your gut when you eat the food. And then they're in there and they're like, I want more of what I eat. I want more of that sugar. I want more of that meat. And then your brain calculates that and translates it as a craving. Like, where's the thing that, but it's the shit controlling you, your brain. And so if you can get that out of you, I feel like when you're in the psychedelic realm or in the spirit realm, it's not going to be affecting you. You're not going to see these crazy sugar demons and whatever the fuck they are manifesting.
Mine was Little Totino's pizzas, dude. That's all I kept thinking about that entire week, where it was just like a weird thing from college that I loved. I still love Little Totino's to this day, so I'm not shitting on you. Put pizza, you know, the ones that are 99 cents in the bag.
Pound those things.
The best, right?
At one point.
But that's so, like, I had weird thoughts about that type of shit. I was able to focus pretty well on it, writing-wise and all that other stuff, but I didn't have, like, a spiritual fucking awakening or anything like that.
Anecdotally,
I felt healthier. I felt good. I like healthy afterwards, but...
To kill cravings, if you ever have food cravings and you want to get rid of them, if you right when you're about to eat the food, your mouth will start salivating. You get that salty saliva that comes up. Just spit out the salty saliva and then the craving goes away. I think what's happening is the bacteria that wants the food is coming up to get first dibs. And when you get it out of you, it's not controlling you anymore. Tried it. It's like 5 or 6 times that it worked. You can just kill a craving instantly. Probably the best way for people out there listening.
Yeah, and you weigh about 140. So yeah. Like,
how's that work with good. Cocaine though?
I haven't tried that yet.
Cocaine, oh, we got cocaine.
There's some up in the.
Oh no, he's definitely done cocaine.
Cocaine. 28 days after I took it, I was like, I could go for some cocaine. 28 days later, it was still affecting me. But then after I was like, oh, that's addiction. I didn't do it, and then the craving went away after that. 28 days, dude.
I refuse to drink or do any drug if I feel like I have or need to. Like,
yeah.
That's why I switch it up so much. I never do the same thing for very long.
The only thing that I... Xanax for me, but that's just simply for sleep. So other than that, meh. I could take it or leave it with most things.
Yeah, I had a serious weed problem when I had no purpose in life. But then as soon as I had a reason to live and things to do, all that shit's just sideways. It's I'd go for a three-mile walk in the morning. But the Alpha Brain helps a lot. This stuff was... pretty useful.
Yeah, this ketone IQ is really great. That's what I swapped out Alpha Brain for. But
caffeine. Yeah. I cut back on caffeine.
I don't have coffee, I can't get up in the morning.
Dude, what a life changing when you can control that addiction. That was what I said was the biggest conspiracy theory on the panel on Saturday. And I was kind of joking, but I was like, caffeine.
Yeah.
It's the biggest fucking conspiracy co-op mind fuck in the reality.
It's
right
not
now.
Even that big of a. I wouldn't even say it's a conspiracy theory anymore. There's a German study, I think from 2012, that shows that people who drink coffee 4 more times a week before 9 a.m., their brain function for the entire day, if they don't drink coffee, is like 40% lower.
Yeah, what's up with that? I've been noticing that. I had no coffee for 10 days.
Caffeine stimulates your the electricity in your fucking brain. So, I mean, that's what it is. But why doesn't it persist? Why doesn't your brain get used to that and continue to produce that amount of electricity?
Because I'm not a big coffee guy, right? And the hilarious part about it is he was a Black Rifle, all my best friends and all that other stuff created Black Rifle coffee and all that stuff. Evan would always get pissed off at me when we were, you know, go to these tastings and things. Like, I like my coffee as white as an NBA player's wife. It is simply just to get it in my body.
As white as Jesus.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, Jesus was white, obviously, blonde hair and some blue eyes. And It's simply just to get up, start the day, move on, and then I'm good. With this, with a Keto on IQ, I'll take a shot of this before the shows. Folks, I focus, lock in, same, you know, it replaced the alpha brain for me just to lock in for the day. And then I'm good to go after that.
Probably caffeine, it takes up your adenosine receptors. You've got these adenosine, which it tells you when you're tired. I don't want to get this wrong. I'm not a chemist. Maybe you know more than me. But like the caffeine takes the place of the adenosine receptors. So even if you're tired, you don't feel tired because these things have blocked the fatigue receptors. Mm. But then your body's still tired. So halfway through the day, you're like, God, you're working at 60%.
That's the 5-hour energy pitch. Oh, are you tired at 2 p.m.?
Yep.
The reason is because you've blocked your fatigue receptors, right? It's no different than being on opiates and blocking opioid receptors. The good news is a heroic dose of psilocybin will flush those receptors. Or Ibogaine, that's pretty intense, though. So unless you're, like, addicted to heroin or something, I wouldn't recommend
that. Have you guys done the Ibogaine?
Jared did.
Our I have other a lot of friends have done it.
Did it change him?
It did. And look, we can say this now, I think, right? I think it changed him for about 18 months. Mm. And then you go back. They call it the honeymoon phase, I think is what they call it. And then you go back to everything else after that. So I don't know. I don't really have an answer on it.
Like it only lasted for 18 months and then it was just kind of back to business as usual kind of?
Well, I don't know. And you might know more than me. Do you have to keep doing it?
No. You just have to be intentional about the changes you want to make. Like if you were happy with the way you were living your life before, then you're going to go back to do that stuff. It's a tabula rasa kind of thing. It like wipes the slate clean, but still you are an autonomous human being with choices to make. And if you make the same choice you made before, you're going to... You can live the same, the same thing. He's good evidence of what Neil Brennan saying being fucking stupid, to be honest, because it is about intentionality and self-awareness, right? Uh-huh. So all the things that were bothering Jared before are no longer bothering him. Now he's doing all the fun shit that he used to do, but he jettisoned the bullshit, right? Yep. That's a choice that you make. That isn't about, the fucking drug's not magic. Neil Brennan's just a fucking pussy.
I just don't know if you can control your brain. If a lot of people are strong enough to control their brain. And I'm considering myself in that group.
Doing the drug is what gets you strong, though, right? Like you have to do it. That's going to the gym for your brain.
I think you could because you operate on a different level.
No, the reason that I operate on a different level, aside from mild autistic bullshit, is that I've been doing this for fucking 25 years, right? I've been doing this intentionally for 25 years. So
I noticed when cutting out the weed was always my demon. Stagnancy was my demon, but I used weed to be stagnant and was walking. Like I couldn't just stop. I had to do something else. And that was like invigorating me and getting the hips moving and the blood flowing. And that's the intention. Mm. So like, it's easy to not fall back into like sedentaryism when there's an intentional motivational change. What does it take? Like, 3 weeks and then 3 months and then 3 years. And that's like who you really are.
10 weeks to really establish the habit. But even after that,
is that what they say?
Yeah.
10 okay.
weeks. Yeah. We used to think it was 21 days. 10 weeks is more accurate now, but still you have to I can go 10 weeks without doing something and immediately fall back into that trap. People do it all the time.
Yeah.
Right. People that have been in AA for years will relapse.
Yeah.
They actually always relapse because AA is bullshit.
They used to have LSD was a big part of AA.
It should be.
Bill W and Dr. Bob? Bill W took LSD and then he was like, oh my God, I quit drinking. So then in the literature, they scrapped the LSD. They're like, yeah, let's just make it about the cult and the community. And like, yeah, community's good, but community with LSD can be very, very powerful to alter your brain chemistry.
It's about power, dude. All of it's about power at the end of the day.
Well, it's about claiming the power around you, right?
Right.
I mean, think of it as like... think of it like in one of those fucking cash machines with the vacuum cleaner thing, right? Cash is just going all over the place, and the more you can collect, the better off you are, obviously. It's the power is there, but the way that you collect it instead of grabbing at the cash in real life is just personal fucking responsibility, right? Taking responsibility for every intent and action you have, and then everything changes after that. Like, he decided to go fucking walk instead of just sitting on the couch smoking weed all the time. That was a fucking decision he made.
Right, and that's why, like, for me personally, like, I can't do DMT or ayahuasca, is like, the whatever power that is, if I can't control it, or... I got too much shit to do every day, and I got 3 kids, and I don't want to risk it now. I think later on in life, sure.
Yeah, that could be understandable. DMT was very inviting. It's got a... I was like, had this real fear of like, oh, it's not where it's all oh, the set. Oh, the pan. Whoa. The whole stereoscopic reality appeared. These letters and number patterns started to pull like ribbons flowing in all these different angles, like A's and Z's and seven backwards, seven zigzags that aren't really like English. No, and then they took on the shape of the outline of her skin. This woman who was like waving me towards her, and then there was a guy standing and watching to the side, smaller, but then I realized later he was further back. That's why he looked smaller, like that parallax you were mentioning earlier. Mm-hmm. And then in the middle, there's another deity or entity or whatever they are. And it was just so inviting. I was like, wow, they really want me. They're here, and they're happy that you witness them. And I don't know if them and they is the right terminology, but I didn't go all blast off at that point. It was for me in a nice, calm, quiet. I don't have kids. I didn't have responsibility. I did. I was like, oh, I only have 2 hours. And that was freaking me out. And then all of a sudden that was gone. And I was like, what? Time is not real. Time is motion. Anyway, when you can really live in that kind of state, you're good to go. Time being just like a relative.
Which would be awesome. Now, yeah. I look at it like I'd have to be rich enough to buy into that shit, right? You know, where I'm like, all right, cool. If I check out and then I finally get there, then great, dude. Let's do it.
I don't think it changes you like that, though. It just makes you better at what you're already doing, and it makes you more well-adjusted. So you might have an interpersonal issue with a particular person. You're on DMT, and you think about it. It'll come to your mind. It has to, right? It's like...
And I don't want
to
think about it.
No, but that's not how it works, though. There's a gravity to that shit. It'll come to your brain, and you will start asking and answering questions yourself. It just kind of happens naturally like that. And you'll arrive at one of two conclusions. Either here's the way to repair this, or maybe I just never will, and that's okay. That's how it works. I've done this fucking hundreds of times. I've never seen anybody wake up from this stuff and be like, oh man, I don't know what I'm going to do now. I've never, not once ever have I ever experienced something like that. And I'm talking about everybody from drug addicts to tier one operators that I put through this shit. Right. The result is almost always identical.
So with this, and like, you know, you're into conspiracies and everything else with DMT, did that make you want to start thinking about all this other shit more?
No, although it was the psilocybin that really made me like, where is all the fucking trash going? We did, for the first time I did psilocybin was a heroic dose with my friend who was like semi-shamanic, you know, he's just some dude, the hippie dude, but he was like trustworthy. And we walked around Manhattan Beach. And it was trash night. And I was like, what are we fucking doing? And then I was like, yo, my girlfriend had cheated on me. She was a stripper for, and I was like, well, I cheated on her. And I was like, I got to tell her. And he's like, then tell her. So I went home that night, tripping my balls off, and told her. And I took one in the face. There's videos of it on YouTube. Check it out. Black eye. There's videos of me talking about it on YouTube because I was so open.
Of her punching you in the face?
No, of me with a black eye talking about the story like the next day. And my management dropped me. I was in LA as an actor. They were like, Ian, you're too crazy. We can't do this. But then it just led me on this path of honesty and openness. And then the openness advanced after that. And then I became more open to the ideas that things are happening behind the scenes that I don't see. And that's kind of the conspiracy. I don't believe things without evidence. I will not. But to things.
What's your YouTube channel? Let's see if Bob can find you with the black
eye. Check
it
out. Cross Mac. It was on my first channel. Cross Mac. CrossMack. If you type Cross Mac black eye, it might pop up. I think it was on my old YouTube channel. And then I changed it to my name, Ian Crossland. This Cross Mac channel was fucking crazy. I started in 06 and got, you'll probably have to go way back to like 2007 or 2008.
Whoa, so you left all these videos and you were like, fuck it.
Yeah, let people see. I thought often about, should I pull these down? Because a lot of stuff I would talk about, I was high or I don't believe it really anymore. But I thought it would be cool to leave up just so people can watch the journey in retrospect later.
We are in black eye territory.
Here it is, so. Black eye it is. This is when management dropped me.
No, so they found this on their own, and they're like, yo, what the fuck are you doing?
Yeah, they found me through YouTube. They wanted me, and then as soon as like 3 weeks later, I started making these because I had this rebel. I was like, I am on top of the world. Nothing can stop me. I'll tell everyone the truth. And they're like, no, we just wanted you to be a famous actor and shut up. I was like, I'll do social. So I co-founded Minds with Bill. He found me, thank God, and kind of pulled me out of the vortex of like, losing my mind of honesty and like, I'm not an actor anymore. What am I going to do with my life?
Yeah.
Crazy times.
That's
awesome.
So fucking funny, man.
Dude.
So let's get into, cause you work with Tim Pool.
Yeah.
You're on Tim Cast all the time and all that other shit. Let's get into some more conspiracies here. You brought up 9/11.
Yeah.
Do you think that was the government?
I don't know. I think that someone planted bombs in the buildings. According to like people that are on the scene, they're like, we heard pop, 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 pop. and then the building comes down. I worked at Ground Zero. I got hired there in October of 2001 with AMEC through a temp agency to go do cleanup. And I just sat in the American Express building, which was right across the street from the pile, with like a cop on the second floor. And we would just do, we were just sitting there for security, 6 p.m. to 6 a.m.
Holy shit.
Thursday night, Friday night, Saturday night, up in excess, so like 36 hours over the weekend. And he and I would take shifts sleeping. And then all the windows were blown out. I didn't think anything of it at the time. The firemen would come in and they'd be like, yo, there's floods of molten steel under the buildings. He's like, you think we're going to find bodies? We find the bodies are under your feet, washing down into the East River, man. Everything's melted. And I thought, well, I guess that's what happened when buildings fall down. There's just melted steel. In retrospect, I find out, no, that's what nanothermite does. It melts steel. So I think someone planted nanothermite bombs up and down the elevator shafts. They set off the bombs. They blew the supports. The things come down in a near controlled free fall. I mean, it's indicative of a controlled demolition. If you talk to the architects and engineers for 9/11 Truth, Richard Gage's organization, I think it's Richard Gage, all these 1,600 architects and engineers around the planet are like, yeah, this indicates a controlled demolition. Building one, building two, then one, then seven, which didn't even get hit, comes down in near free fall speed, indicating that the supports have been blown out. So someone set that up. I mean, that I can tell. I have no idea who did it. I just follow the money. That's what people tell me. I'm like, who? We immediately went into Iraq. We went into go get one guy, Osama, which turned into a war in a fucking Iraq. Halliburton, Dick Cheney's company, gets set up as the arms manufacturer over there. He was the vice president. He issued a stand down that day on the planes before the buildings got hit. I don't know if he was involved or if he was just a dumb.
I hate to interrupt you. What do you mean a stand down?
They were running sorties. They were running like training exercises that morning. To be honest, I don't want to misspeak, but I believe that. I'll take that back, but they didn't go. Maybe they did actually blow up that plane over Pennsylvania. You know the Let's Roll story.
Mm-hmm.
There's a 911 call from the plane. They're like, "Yo, there's an explosion outside the plane. Now there's white smoke pouring out of the plane," and then the plane went down. They shot it down. Like so, I don't think everybody was involved in it. And whether or not Dick Cheney actually ordered a stand down, I don't know. So that might have been me speaking out of turn. I should make that clear. I don't know, but I think that somebody didn't know. Like there was maybe pilots, you know. Scrambled, and then one of them took out that plane because they're like, shit, two planes hit the World Trade Center. We're not letting another one hit the White House or wherever that's going. Shoot it down. And then they made up a story of the Let's Roll that some hero took the plane down. But that doesn't mean that they were involved. That George Bush, just because he said that, doesn't mean that he was involved in blowing up the plane. And I kind of would have wished that they just told us, yeah, we shot the plane down. We had to. We couldn't risk it.
I kind of feel like they would have said they did that. Honestly, that would have been okay to do.
Right. I think so too, but there was also a bunch of planes that were still up in the air at that point, and there was so much confusion. What if they had gotten the wrong plane? You know, what if they had gotten it wrong on one of these flights?
Yeah, or maybe it was a rogue pilot that was just like, I'm not going to be the guy that let the White House get hit. Who knows? But that plane, white smoke, according to the 911 calls, was pouring out of the side of the plane after a large explosion outside the plane. Yeah. Sounds like it got hit.
The one in Pennsylvania, right?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah, it's flight 93.
We find one passport and no black box.
Dude, from the plane that hits the building, there's a passport on the ground? Are you fucking kidding me? It's the biggest piece of bullshit propaganda. Like,
here's the thing about this that makes me upset. So adjusted for inflation, it would cost $18.6 billion to rebuild the World Trade Center. Now, if I'm ever to do business with the Saudis, that's what I would ask them to do. That's the only way they could buy my soul, because they were responsible in a lot of ways for 9/11 as well. You guys rebuild the entire World Trade Center. We're going to fucking fly a plane into it. And we're going to see two planes into it. We're going to see how this thing fucking falls down. Right.
So you
why not? I would do that. If I was the Saudi royal family, I would do that just to troll the U.S. government, frankly.
So you think the Saudis built the trade? Wait, what are you saying exactly?
No. I'm saying we could rebuild it now for $18.5 billion. And then fly two planes in and see how that motherfucker falls down without any kind of weird shit going on. Why not?
Just to test it?
Yeah. Elon bought Twitter for $44 billion just so he could post pictures of memes and shit.
I would love any delve into 9/11. That 9/11 commission's insane. They said that fires caused the entire structure of the entire building to... Fires on the 98th floor caused all the supports on every floor under it to go down there. Well, yeah, it was jet fuel leaked down and melted, softened the steel beam. I'm like, dude, do some fucking research. When the building came down, they shipped all that rubble to China like in 3 weeks as fast as they could. They got it out of there. I think because they wanted to cover up the nanothermite dust, but they still found a bunch in the powder all around the demolition sites.
I'm going to call them demolitions because there's the burden of proof is on you to prove that wasn't a controlled demolition if you really want to do that. All physics indicate that that thing came down in a controlled demolition.
What's the one passport thing that I haven't heard of?
That it fell out of the plane. But it's like, dude, that plane went into the building and exploded as a fireball. So nothing's fallen out of it.
One of the hijackers' passports was found, or part of it.
That's really? So we were told.
Yeah.
In the wreckage around.
That's like, you know, Dave Chappelle does that joke about the cops sprinkling crack on dead black people.
Yeah.
It's like, like nobody dies with crack sprinkled on.
Was it Mohammed Atta? His passport. Yeah. They found Mohammed. He was apparently one of the ringleaders.
And by the way, you look this shit up. I mean, ResearchGate, which does professional research, active thermite was definitely found at the bomb site or at bomb site.
These little red chips of it, they find it. Nanothermite, which is like military grade incendiary that they'll use to decommission tanks in the field. If they don't want to bring them back, they'll just melt the thing.
It's white phosphorus. Sort of. It's not the same. It's actually an explosive and not a chemical in the same way. But
it would have an ash like white phosphorus?
Well, the difference is that it burns, I think, at 3,000 degrees, something like that. So it'll melt metal.
Okay.
That's the difference. Like jet fuel doesn't burn that fucking high temperature, not even close.
And Ian, with you working there, how long did you do that job and what did you see?
I worked there from October of 2001 to December of 2001. So 2 months of intense, every weekend, 36 hours overnight. And, I saw the pile. I never walked up on the pile. I just saw dudes going up there and coming back and talking. I remember one fireman in particular who he was the guy who was like, dude, there's rivers of molten steel under the rubble.
So here we go. So jet fuel burns at 1500 degrees Fahrenheit. Thermite burns at 4500 degrees Fahrenheit and steel burns at 2500 degrees Fahrenheit.
Melts, rather,
yeah.
2,500, yeah. So
it's like, there's no way that jet fuel could have done that. I don't know about all the other surrounding implications of that, but it is a fact that thermite was found at the at least Tower 7 or whatever the fuck it's called, and that jet fuel does not get hot enough to burn metal. It just doesn't.
It doesn't get hot enough to melt it, right?
But it could warp it, yes.
That's what I'm saying. That's what I was going to ask, is it could weaken it and then
it could weaken it, yes, but that's not what... Like for the two towers, that might be a possibility, but for the other building where there's molten steel, that's not a possibility. That's the point being made. Okay. So it is possible that the towers fell because of the pressure and the weight and, you know, all that bullshit. But there's no way that a building that didn't get hit, like there's no jet fuel over there. Allegedly, some of it leaked over, but that's not. Even if it did. And it wouldn't be hot enough to fucking melt the steel that they found.
And these rivers of molten steel were there for months.
Did you see them personally when you were working?
No, the firemen would tell me about it. It was so hot that when they would find a body, they would find white twizzlery substance that was melted bone. And that was all they would find. And they knew it was a fireman because they'd find a fireman jacket, which was the heat enough resistance, and then they'd wrap the bone.
Yeah, so Max, really? I'm sorry, Mark.
Fuck, I didn't know that.
Mark Legeau, who is president of Controlled Demolition, Inc., and this is, by the way, on National Institute of Standards and Technology.gov. This is not fucking some conspiracy website. This guy, who is the president of Controlled Demo, Inc., was hired for Building 7 cleanup. There's a sworn affidavit of him saying there's molten steel found all over Tower 7. So there's no, like, those are just the facts. We know for a fact that whatever happened with those two planes did not cause 7 to come down. Couldn't have happened.
They talked about pulling it the day of. There was an interview where they were like, I think it's Larry Silverstein, was like, they said they were going to have to pull the building. And I just said, there's just so much loss of life already. Just pull it. Just pull it. And that's the terminology of just demolish the thing. Mm. Pull the demolition. Pull the building. Knock the building down. Maybe that's a little more anecdotal. I'm more into the scientific evidence of the thermite and the molten steel.
Yeah, and I was listening. Tucker Carlson was talking about this about a week ago, week and a half ago. What he said, I don't know why this keeps getting brought up now in different circles. What he said was interesting. He goes, look, I think it's something to look into. I have no idea who did it, funded it, all that other stuff, exactly what you said. Why, though, won't the government just release everything they have to make the public feel better about it? And then a conspiracy is not a conspiracy anymore if you just release.
Well, there's only one reason not to release the information, and that's if you're involved. Or if somebody who you've promised you wouldn't tell is involved. The same way with JFK. We know that there are still people active in government
that are alive
who were maybe not active in government then, but who are relatives of people who are active in government then, who are still working at the agency or whatever the fuck else, right?
There's what was the Gulf of Tonkin that came out, but maybe the people, it was just people didn't give a fuck anymore. I don't know. That was the what is it, a ship in off the coast of Vietnam that got apparently attacked by the Vietnamese, which was our casus belli to go into the Vietnam War.
But which is what we're trying to do it again now with this fucking flotilla we're going to put off the coast of Gaza.
It already got bombed, by the way. I mean, you called it as soon as it went up.
That's the only reason to send that thing over there, dude. Because we were already airdropping supplies. Like, every now and again, a family of three gets crushed by a big wooden crate. Who fucking cares?
Yeah.
It's food. Don't stand under it.
You're going to crack a couple eggs, man.
I got to be honest, man. I mean, if it comes through the top of your house, that's one thing. But if you get hit in an open field by a giant crate from the sky, you kind of had that one coming.
Look up.
You kind of had that one coming.
Just look around.
You'll see a lot of cool stuff up there, too, anyway.
Get off your phone.
Put your phone down. Steel actually melts at 2,850 degrees Fahrenheit. So it's above 2,500. I mean, there's a whole – if you search undisputed facts point to the controlled demolition of WTC-7 just that phrase, you'll find this document, and it's request and answer of a bunch of questions from the 9/11 commission. NIST was conducting research for the 9/11 commission, and they were talking to firefighters that were on the scene, demolition experts, people that were hired to actually come clean up the shit, and all the stuff they found. Like, there's video somewhere of steel beams being pulled out by cranes and then having metal still dripping off of them because it was molten, right? Uh-huh. Like, it's just impossible. So what do you think would have happened, right?
I watched it, it on the Tucker thing when Tucker was talking about it again, because I hadn't looked at it in years.
The good news is that there aren't many chemical agents on Earth that can get that hot. So we know there's only a couple things it could possibly be. Right?
Uh-huh.
It could only be thermite or fucking white phosphorus or something like that. It can't be anything else.
Because on the meme show, though, you know, there's always 9/11 memes, it feels like every week, obviously. Mm-hmm. But we don't see the building go down, right? You just see the plane going in the building and everything else. So I hadn't watched the towers going down in a very long time. And then I flipped it on after I saw that Tucker thing. And when you watch it again, because it had been fucking years at this point, you're like, man, it really, it just went straight down in a perfect, usually it's not perfect like that.
Or it's not near free fall. Usually if it's pancaking, it wouldn't be falling in near free fall speed either.
But when you rewatch it again, it probably had been close to 20 years. Like, I don't know that I've rewatched it since it happened live on television, to be honest with you, all the towers coming down. It does come down in a perfect line, a perfect thing. And
I wonder if it makes sense to do that, though. Like, if it let's just give everybody the benefit of the doubt and towers 1 and 2 were damaged so much that they needed to come down, otherwise they were going to risk all the other buildings. Like, if it did tip over and hit another building, then we got a much bigger problem.
Correct.
Right?
Yep.
So again, it's like, it would make sense to me if the government or whomever decided, like, hey, we need to fucking take this thing down.
This is a better option, yeah. Same with that plane.
Except that they would have had to have the explosives in place before the planes hit. I agree with you. Maybe someone did it benevolently. They're like, we don't want it to topple.
I mean, follow that thread, because the details matter, right? Like, you don't have to make assumptions there. You can. That's what a reasonable person would do, right? Like, there are things that are possible and things that are impossible. We know that it's impossible for fuel from a jet to melt steel. That's not how life works, right? Unfortunately, the physics are not on your side there. But you can put yourself into these hypotheticals and be like, well, and be open-minded about it. Like, it's an extreme situation, but I probably would have done something like that. But to your point, it kind of implies some prescience, right? Like, you would have had to have known in advance.
Well, the other part about this, too, is I'll picture myself as a family member. And let's say, my father died in one of those buildings. I think as a normal citizen walking the earth, I would rather believe in my own mind that a terrorist did this rather than our own government, rather than there was a chance that they could have saved him, or, maybe if it was left up long enough, and that's, the explanation of, well, we blew up the building because we didn't want it to tip over on the other buildings or anything else and kill even more people. We were willing to kill your father over it. That would be a hard explanation for a lot of people to live with. And I think the same thing with the people on that plane, where if the government did shoot it out of the sky, I think I would rather my father being on that plane, dying as a hero and hearing that story and living my life like that versus whatever the truth was.
That's it. It's the cognitive dissonance, they'll call it, when it's like a reality is so hard, so painful to think is possible that you'll just shut out the possibility completely. Like, I'd rather live in blissful ignorance than conceive that this could actually be happening. But I've overcome that somehow and just looked at the cold, hard facts, as disgusting it is, lead me to want to vomit and kill myself. I'll accept the facts, the math, the physics.
But is there somebody in your life that has passed away under strange circumstances that you wish you didn't know about or not? And the reason I ask is, you know, it is so painful when you lose a family member or a loved one or something like that. You almost want to believe that it was for a reason or was for a purpose or they did something heroic. And when you don't have that answer and you can't attach it to anything, that's when real pain and sorrow sets in and it gets really fucking dark. Like, for instance, I follow Francis Ngannou on Instagram. This morning I woke up and I saw that he had posted that his child had died. It was a year and a half old. And it is if you haven't read the post, it is unbelievably heartbreaking. And he is literally asking the world for answers on this post of why he lost his child and what he's supposed to do. If you had an answer to it, I think it would help you in your day-to-day life and going on forward. If you don't have one, I mean, that's where all this other shit is.
That's a problem of consciousness, though. We want big answers to big questions, but that's not how life works.
Right? It's not, but take this 9/11 sitch. If that was the answer of terrorists versus, hey, we had to blow it up, sorry, you lost your dad and some other people, I'd rather live with the terrorist thing.
But that cognitive dissonance runs much deeper than just dealing with experiential trauma. I mean, 2 million people signed up and deployed to go over to those two countries, one of which had nothing to do with it at all.
Right.
Right. As a matter of fact, Afghanistan had nothing to do with it either. It wasn't even the Taliban. It was Al-Qaeda. Like, think of Taliban as a government, not a good one. It's not a good one. They're assholes for sure. Yeah. But it's not Al-Qaeda. Those are two completely separate entities, right?
Uh-huh.
So we go, that would be like somebody invading America to get rid of the Crips because they're coming across the, like, let's say Crips and Blood start going over the Mexican border and fucking people up or whatever, kind of like how their cartels do to us, you know?
Yeah.
And we, or the Mexican government decided to invade the U.S. and take over the whole country, kill all of our leaders and replace them with fucking people that are friendly to Mexico. That's what we did in Iraq and Afghanistan. Except for Iraq, they didn't actually do anything.
And Libya later in Libya. Down the line, and tried in Syria as well. We're kind of still in Syria. And, like, the whole fucking
thing. And that's the other part about it is, we'll take my example and then going through what Dan just said. It's the selfishness of the individual and what they want to believe in and why. And that's what all of this shit is.
What do you mean the selfishness of the individual?
We'll take the story I just told, right? We were using hypotheticals, obviously. Let's say my father was in it, and then it died, and me personally saying, oh, I'd rather be a terrorist than, you know, them fucking demoing the building and potentially saving my father. You think about that moment and that moment alone because it affects you as the person, which is selfish. You don't attach to it that, yes, we lost a ton of soldiers overseas because of this war and everything else that was attached after it. You're just thinking about that one selfish moment in the time. And I think that's what that's why me personally, all these conspiracy theories are fun to think about or explore or whatever, because everybody has their own selfish reason for wanting to believe one way or the other why a certain event occurred.
But that's why it's so important to have a belief system, an infrastructure of a belief system that is about something other than yourself, right?
Mm-hmm.
Because that's just how we're programmed biologically. Like, for base needs, we're taught to look inward. For Maslow's hierarchy of needs, we're taught to take care of ourselves. But that's the reptilian side, right? That's the lower, maybe even lower mammalian brain talking. It's the survival instinct. But that's not who we are, right? We are, humanity exists in the aggregate. You know what I mean? Like, it's the reason people are so miserable now is because they got rid of God and didn't replace it with anything else. It isn't just getting rid of God. Like, you can do that. Many people do that and have happy lives, successful lives, full of meaning and purpose. But as in the aggregate, we didn't do that. And what that means is that my meaning is meaning to me, right?
Mm-hmm.
But that meaning doesn't stretch beyond me unless I find a community that believes like I do. So that means I'm on an island by myself. Now, like for me personally, I have meaning, but how do I ever pass that on to my kids?
Right? Yeah. Yeah.
Or how do we ever build a community, which is what we're biologically programmed to do if we don't have shared meaning somehow? So it isn't that you necessarily need God for that, but it is necessary to have meaning that is aggregate, right? Like we all have to believe sort of the same thing. It's why America has been so successful, because up until relatively recently, the majority of people believe that work hard equals success, right? Mm. Very simple. And it doesn't have to be some grandiose idea. Hard work equals success. That's it. Right. That's America. That's what it is. Now we don't believe that anymore. And absent God or something to fall back on, that's why we're here.
And that's why I think organized religion is important. Although you and I aren't that religious, like I understand it. And the ideals are there. And we were, I think, discussing the Bible, too, right before you came on air, too, of like the principles in the Bible are great. So if you're living by that, you know, there is great takeaways, and it is a great way to live your life and help your neighbors.
Well, I don't know if it's great to have a prescription for how you're supposed to treat your slaves, which is in the New Testament,
well,
by the way.
Well, there's that. Right? Look, there's that part. And you know, you got to over...
If you want to go to the Old Testament, I don't think it's probably a good idea to execute your children if they're rude. That's probably not a great idea.
Wait till you have kids, though. There is times where you're like, this little fucker, man.
Give me the Bible. Know? I want to rewrite it.
Yeah. But yeah, I think just read the red parts.
The red parts?
Yeah, that's Jesus' speech, basically.
Jesus is pretty legit. Yeah. I do believe, though, the governments get a hold of those books. Like the Quran, I was told, was really good in that it was kind of a women's liberation at the time, 700 AD. It gave power to women to orchestrate the economics of the household, which had been unheard of up to that point. And then the governments got involved, and they're like, actually, let's strip power from the women, cover them up.
Not nearly as organized as Christianity, though. Like the councils of Trent and Nicaea and things like that, they didn't necessarily rewrite stuff, but they did exclude certain books and canonize others, right? Mm-hmm. Like the Book of Enoch has all kinds of crazy shit in it about the angels are beautiful and beautiful voices, and then the Nephilim, the demon angels, they're ugly. And it's like, well, you should have known before they fell, right? Like the Uggos got to go. They're all fucked up, right? How would you not know that?
And that still stands to this day.
I agree with that. That's how I judge people. I don't want to see anybody that's poor or ugly ever.
Yeah, by their face.
Yeah.
One thing I've never...
Well, don't tell me don't judge a book by a cover. Stop putting covers on books then, fuckface.
Yeah.
That's the whole goddamn
point. Or give
me
x-ray vision or some shit.
A script never has a cover. It's just got three Brads in it. One thing I've never asked you before we bounce here is I think you got a theology major, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Do they focus on one religion, or are they just teaching you all of them?
I studied comparative religion.
What's that?
Historically comparing the development and execution of all world religions, right? And the reason I study that is because I think that's the best way to understand human beings. Probably not now, actually. Like there's something new going on in sociology that's absent the religious part. And it's just narcissism is really what it is, right? We're just all becoming narcissists. And that's a function of a resource scarcity mindset plus, I don't know, just being weak, probably, maybe. And it's kind of like the ugly cousin of individualism. It's like, I don't feel like you lose trust in institutions because they suck. And then... So you're extremely narcissist and you think everything important in the world right now is happening to you. That's how you view everything in life. Like these fucking idiots protesting on college campuses right now. Meaningless.
Yeah.
Utterly meaningless. You have nothing to do with that. As a matter of fact, if you're going to Columbia University and you're concerned that part of their endowment is being invested into Israeli companies, you can divest from that right now by stopping. Don't pay them any more tuition, you fucking retard.
Yeah, just leave the school.
You don't have to put a tent out on the lawn and sleep outside LARPing.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? You're tailgating life.
Do you think that...
But that's... Let me close the loop on this. That's how narcissists think. Everything in the world that's happening is happening to them. That's how it works. But then because that's the weight of that is so strong, that cognitive dissonance kicks in, right? So you just start to build your own solitary epistemology in your head. So now we have, instead of thousands, millions of people who all believe generally the same thing, right? That worship the same, think the same, do the same kind of math, all this other stuff. Now you have a bunch of individuals, right? And every one of them thinks that they're the fucking main character. So nothing gets done.
Yeah.
Nobody's on the same page.
It's got to be a balance, because it is, in a way, your perception is kind of crafting and guiding your reality, but that's the same for everyone. And unless we can learn how to balance that out with other people, we're fucked.
Yeah.
Do you think math...
I mean, if we're playing tug of war against existential crises, whatever they happen to be, just the danger of life, Earth trying to kill us, or if aliens show up or any of that shit, if it's tug of war... and none of us are pulling in the same direction, we're all going to die.
Yeah.
Right? That's fucking stupid.
Yeah. You guys were talking about, like getting outside of yourself and believing in something greater than the whole... And I was thinking about math. That's how I kind of focused. But do you think math is a religion? I've thought of it as a language for sure, but is it a religion?
It's definitely a language. I mean, it's a language of the universe.
Like base 10, just because we'll say, what is 4 plus 4? Well, in base 5, it is like... I don't know. It's not 8. There is no 8 in base 5. So is it religious to think that math is base 10 at all times? Have we fallen into this false belief structure, just assuming that?
I think that doesn't work for time, right? Like time, we don't measure in tens. So it's interesting how we can jump from different bases to another. But I don't know if I would say it's a religion necessarily. I don't know if we, and I don't know if we're, I think it's just the most convenient, to be honest.
Because everything is based on numbers. Yeah. Now.
And maybe, it's easy to multiply and divide by 10. It's easy to count in tens, right? So maybe our brain just chose the easiest way. I don't know.
It's a good question. What is one? What does that really mean? How can you ever break something down into one? I mean,
we didn't know what zero was until the period, Bob, you were talking about the other day in the Middle East, where they invented, like Egypt, invented the zero. We didn't know what that was. They invented algebra. We had no idea what the fuck that was.
You two invented one.
Yeah.
So if you listen to that song, you'll have all the answers.
I think Metallica's version is
from
better,
the heart.
Yeah.
To be honest.
Yeah.
Metallica's probably top dog.
So just look into it.
One is about Johnny Get Your Gun. It's a World War One novel about a guy who gets blown up and he loses his arms, legs, sight, speech, and hearing. He's just like a fucking torso and a head, melted all to shit, but he can't talk or communicate to anybody. He's begging everyone around him to kill him. That's what the song One by Metallica is about. Oh. That's pretty fucking depressing.
Whoa.
Yeah. I mean, because have you ever thought about, is it getting better? Or do you feel the same?
I feel the same.
Will it make it easier for you now? Or do you have someone to blame?
To blame, maybe.
And that's one. That's you too. So...
You.
Some answers we'll never have.
You too.
Well.
Do they know it's Christmas after all?
That
is the real one.
That was the one that really that really changed the world, by the
way. I do wonder when we started counting. It seems like it was probably a resource thing.
These?
Right?
Is this why we live in base 10? Because we have 10 fingers?
Probably.
It's probably. Right. Yeah.
But so would that be a religion, or is that just like utilitarian?
Or financial, where, hey, dude, you owe me 10 of these and then multiply it by that.
Even the way that our brains process numbers now, I said earlier that it's easier to count in tens, but maybe that is a function of having 10 fingers and toes, right? That's how we learned over the course of millions of years to fucking do that.
If I ask someone what 2 + 2 is and they say 4 and they will refuse to question that, then I feel like that's religiously dogmatic, because in base 3, there is no 4. Mm. The answer is going to be something different when you add 2 + 2. So they'll be, but it means the same thing. And I'm like, but it's different.
Somebody came up with a meaning. Yeah, somebody said, hey, this is what it is and this is what this means. But you could change that every day if you want. You know, you could just start throwing money at people whenever the check arrives at a restaurant and be like, no, like, this is what I mean.
Like, you know? Really hard, too. I throw it really hard when I threw it.
Scott Disick, just stuff a $100 bill in their mouth.
From converting from base 4 to base 3, a 3 would be 10.
Okay.
Nonsense.
So 2 + 1 equals 10 in base 3.
Right.
Or it equals 1, 0.
Well, it equals 1, 0, but if you move that to base 10, it would be 10.
It's, and people are like,
there's this thing going around where, like, 2 plus 2 equals 5. Have you heard that dumb meme? 2.4 plus 2.4 equals 4.8 that you round up to 5, so therefore 2. It's not. But that doesn't mean that 2 plus 2 always equals 4, although the concept remains. It's a different language, a different way of looking at the same concept. So it's like, and that's what Islam and Christianity are, in my opinion, is different ways of looking at the same concept, which is God and the prophets that come from God.
The FDA operates differently. I can tell you with, like, food and booze and things like that, they'll give you a plus five on either side of it. You know, if you want to round up or round down, you take your pick on it.
Explain that.
I just had that conversation yesterday.
What's that?
We're making 16-ounce cans for the first time for a stadium deal we're doing with the University of Illinois, and you got to change the caloric chart on the back. And I said, I called my dude out of Tactical Brewery, Chris, and I said, hey, just give me the whatever the new calorie count is because it's 4 more ounces. And he was like, well, you know, technically it would be 2.13333, you know, whatever, right? And I go, well, I can't put that on the fucking can. And I was
we should, actually.
Yeah, 2.13 with a line over
then,
it.
Then just put parentheses C-O-N-T period at the end.
Yeah. So I go, look, there was another 16-ounce can of a caloric chart that I had seen because I'll try to test all this shit out everywhere I go. And I go, well, I saw 210 on one of those. And I go, it's probably 2.13, right? And he goes, yeah. And I go, oh, they let you round up or down? And he goes, yeah, yeah. So it's depending upon what you want to do with it. And I go, oh, great. Well, I'm rolling with 210, homie. You know,
like, that's convenient. That mindset has kept us from understanding fusion mathematically, I think, because of, I don't know why.
Well, I think I think the FDA and the government, they know that 90% of us are dumb, and I'm in that fucking category, so it's fine. So, yeah, I'd rather see a 210. I don't want to see a point anything.
Well, I mean, is it nominal, though? Is the amount nominal for the purpose? Like, let's say if you're measuring something and the fractional part that you get from the measurement is nominal, then why add it? It doesn't make any sense to do that.
Nominal meaning? What is nominal?
Nominal meaning it is a small enough figure that it doesn't impact the overall measurement.
And by the way, that's what the FDA actually says of, like, hey, this will not impact it, so fuck it.
But that's only from this is the problem with myopia. That's the problem for one can. Right, yeah. But what about 20 cans?
If now you're drinking them,
but does it become non-nominal at that point? Right, does it become salient at that point? And I think with alcohol, it probably does.
Yeah, if you're drinking all day, you know?
Especially, I mean, with calories as well, right?
Yeah, all of it,
yeah.
But it goes across the board. Interesting, dude. This was a fucking fun show. It's one of those that flies by. I say this from time to time, where you don't even look at the clock and you're like, "Oh fuck, man, we could
definitely go 4 hours today."
Yeah, easily. We could have gone a full Rogan show today. I just don't know who has the time. God bless Rogan. I love him, but
I do have a flight.
Dude, we should go all day one day. But who has 4 fucking hours to listen to a podcast?
Yeah, come in on a Friday one day and we'll go.
Yeah, we'll get weird for sure. Now's the point in the show. We get to the Drinking Bro of the Week, which is someone who has inspired you or helped you become the person you are today. Who'd you like to give the Drinking Bro of the Week to?
It's Muhammad Atta.
The passport.
Muhammad Ali?
Yeah. It was his passport that changed my life. I am Muhammad Ali.
That's like the evidentiary version of the woman doth protest too much. Like, you're fucking kidding me, dude. Don't try to come at me with that evidence. Anyways.
I was going to say my mom, you know, super cliche, but today I'm going to say Toby Turner. Tobuscus. He was PewDiePie before PewDiePie. Mm. He was huge on YouTube. He was big, huge dude, and then he dipped out. He had some bullshit take over his career for a little while, and he made his way through. He and I are working together now. We actually played at the Minds Fest. He's really...
PewDiePie?
No, his name's Toby Turner. His YouTube channel is Tobuscus.
He was the guy playing guitar before the show started.
At the beginning of the show.
Yeah.
And he and I did a song, Black Lives Matter, the current thing. It's a Metallica parody of Nothing Else Matters. Mm. Black Lives Matter. He's so funny. He's giving me... We're starting a band. It's like, he's not giving me... I'm giving myself purpose. But to be able to work with someone that level of talent as closely as we've been working together is like, yo, bro, let's go to the top. So find your friends, connect with your friends, and make magic together.
Awesome. Where can everybody find you?
At Ian Crossland. It's my name. You search it on
the
internet.
Two S's, by the way.
Crossland. Yeah. Fucking a weird name, man.
Yeah, what? It sure is.
I'm gonna make
you're a weird guy, dude.
Yeah, I'm going to bring it to the top.
I love it.
I love it, too. Once you get weird in public, you never have to go back. So be fearless.
It's totally true.
Be brave, yeah. And you can search it. Just search my name. You'll find me all over the place. Follow me all over the place. Twitter's a great place.
By the way, that weird in public thing, you know, Seinfeld's been on the stump lately talking about how it's impossible to do comedy anymore.
Yeah.
He's like, we did a show where Kramer found homeless people to pull rickshaws through the city. because they were outside anyways. You could never do something like that now. And then Rob McElhenney from It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia just posted a picture of Rickety Cricket. He's like, oh, yeah? We've been doing it for fucking 17 years, bud.
You know what's funny? I saw that Seinfeld blowback this morning.
Oh, it's dumb. He's absolutely right, by the way. Everybody knows that's right.
He's right, and it's fine, but there are people out there.
Who just don't... The reason I said is your point is absolutely correct. If you're a piece of shit from the very beginning... It's like, oh, fucking Ian's being crazy again. It's like,
It's Always Sunny can get away with it. The examples that Seinfeld listed in that interview, for whatever reason, everybody always forgets about how great It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia is. They always leave that one out. And I think that's what Rob, because they've never been nominated. They've never won a fucking Emmy.
They never will.
Nothing.
Yeah. Is it because they're independent?
They're on FX.
They're on FX. They've been on, it's the longest running sitcom in television history. Yeah.
Yes. And they actually co-own the IP with Fox, right?
Yep.
So they own.
They actually own
the majority of the IP. So
they're really rich.
They could have done whatever they want. But that might also be a function of Fox. They are the worst at promoting their fucking material of any of the other networks, even downstream. If you recall Arrested Development, one of the best TV shows of all time, they gave it no promotion. They didn't spend any of the money that you have to spend to win Emmys and Golden Globes. You have to spend money. It's just the way it works.
Well, the irony is he does Welcome to Wrexham, which is another great, great fucking show. Totally different. Heartstring show.
Rob is
sports,
that?
Yeah.
Robin.
And Ryan Reynolds.
Oh, Reynolds, yeah.
And then he wins all the Emmys.
Oh, yeah.
And then he did a bit about it with his wife where he was like, oh, you know what it's like to have these? No, you'll never know because you're on that other show. And she's like, yeah, the show that my husband created? Awesome, man. Go fuck yourself. Like, and they have a great back and forth about it with the Emmys. And he did finally win. Nobody else in the cast.
Their back and forth is really funny. He'll be like... playing his guitar or something, and then she'll start singing, and he'll just stop and look over at her and like, shut the fuck up.
Just shut up.
The fuck up.
Go to iTunes, rate the show 5-star, and leave a quick review. Also, head on over to Spotify. It's just a 5-star, and you can walk away. We'll keep you in the loop as far as the TxDOT sitch and all that other shit here. If they do have to destroy the building, I say we use that stuff you were talking about for 9/11, though.
The alpha brain?
No, nanothermite.
Let's do that. That's the one. Just really bring it to the ground. I think that'd be fun. Mm-hmm. But we got a lot of DMs about it. We'll figure it out as we go along, and I think that'd be great. So let's have a night where we do that and just melt this.
Melt everything all down.
Oh, it'd be awesome.
Melt
be
my awesome. Brain first, and then we'll do the building.
And like from the phoenix,
for
we'll
sure.
Rise from the ashes.
From the ashes, just like Ben Affleck's back tattoo. Appreciate being here, Ian. For D'Anthony Holloway, I'm Ross Patterson. This is the Drinking Bros Podcast. Good night, everyone.